To all who shall see these presents, greetings. I'm Adam Best. This is Veterans in the Wild. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another show. We're glad to have you here. We appreciate your support. As always, we do appreciate subscriptions, or if you share the show with other guests, that's the best way we can get the word out there to other people. We have a Coast Guard veteran with us today. He was a medic for the Coast Guard, stationed on a Coast Guard cutter and also stationed at a Coast Guard facility in Boston. We have Robbie Yates. Welcome, Robbie.
Hey, Adam. I appreciate it, man. It's an honor to be on the show.
It's a good way to spend a Friday morning, I think. Prep for the weekend. Absolutely. Kind of relax. Yeah. So can you tell us your journey before the Coast Guard, why you decided to join, and maybe the early days?
Yeah, sure, man. It was kind of it's interesting. I was talking to a guy this morning over coffee, in church, and we're talking about this, and he actually was talking about, and I said, it was kind of like this calling, if you will, divine intervention, spirit led, Lord saying, hey, you need to get the heck out of Memphis, because the road I was on was not a healthy road. It was either I was going to end up in prison or I was going to end up dead. So I had to make a change. I had to shake my life up because I just had to do that. So I was looking at the service. Yeah, absolutely, man. Yeah. So I had to change it up. So then I went late. I joined at 26. And then I was in there. I was called the old man. I was called grandfather when I was in the boot camp, which was fine. It drove me a little more to show the young bucks up that 18, 19, that they couldn't hang with a 26-year-old man. So that drove me and determined me even more to prove myself. And then, yeah, man, from right after that, I was stationed on this massive ship. It was U.S. Coast Guard cutter Eagle. It's a bark. It's a 3-mast sailing vessel, 23 sails, length of a football field, beam, the waist of it is wide as about 40 feet. And we're – quick backstory on that. That ship was actually – a war prize in World War II, and it was actually built and has some German writing on there. And Hitler never sailed on it, but there's been some pictures of him on the Eagle. And so after World War II, we brought the ship to New London, Connecticut, to the Coast Guard Academy after World War II. And then we use it now as a training vessel for the cadets, officer candidates. We still do search and rescue, aids and navigation, everything you normally do on other cutters, we're doing it, except it's more of the being in a fishbowl because you're going to other places and a lot of people see this massive ship, like, what is this? I want to go check it out. And it's really cool. Saw a lot of the world, and that's how actually I met my wife. And then when I met her, I was like, I got to get out because I knew we were going to have some kids, and I wanted to be there for them.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
But that's what I like. It's an intentional decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One thing I heard you say was, being 26, most everyone else is 17, 18, 19. And so that is a time where the body's starting to change a little bit. You're slowing down slightly, certainly where I am at 38, but, did you think you had maybe a mental advantage, a maturity advantage? Did you see anything there?
Yeah, absolutely, man. That's a great question. I did, because I went into it and I knew I was going to get my tail handed to me. I don't know if we can curse on here or not, but I knew I was going to get my ass handed to me, if you will. And I thought, okay, like go into this that you're going to be in great shape, give it everything you got. I knew they were going to come at me with a mental challenge, obviously the physical challenge, but more of the head game, if you will, in a right way. It's not in a negative way. And man, I saw young guys, 18, 19, cry, beg to go home, and just, they couldn't hack it. I mean, they just, and nothing against them. I don't think they knew going into it how, not only the physical demand, but the mental strain that it takes on you to go through boot camp. And not that Coast Guard is any different from other branches. It's just, I mean, you went through the service. I mean, boot camp is not for the faint of heart. I don't care what branch of service you're in it. I mean, it's not easy. So you have to go in there with a certain mentality. So I went with that. So whenever, and that kind of singled me out too. I was thrown in that leadership role right away.
Yes.
Dealing with younger, people 6, 7, 8 years younger than me. And I was okay. I welcomed that opportunity because it was fun. Some of those guys I talked to and helped them kind of get through some difficult times, because you're sleep deprived. I mean, we go to lights out at 10, then we have to be up at 11:30 in the evening, be up to stand watch, you know, for, so you're not going to sleep at 10 o'clock in the evening. And yep. then, okay, guess what, guys, you got a good 8 hours of sleep. You're up at 6 a.m, time to get, no, it's not to get, you know, so you're getting, you know, it's, you're, you know, you get an hour sleep here, you're up, you're down, you're 2 hours here, you go. And some of those guys just didn't know how to cope with it. So I just talked with some of them and we pushed through it, and it was fun. It was a learning experience for myself, but you have to have your mind in the right state of mind, if you will, to make it through that and realize, hey, I'm just getting, you know, kicked around for a little bit. As they say, I don't know what they said in your branch, but for us, we used to say, hey, the days are long, but the weeks are short. Yep. And then we just kept saying that, hey, we got through it.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I was going to say, what I always laugh about is the Navy taught me that I could fall asleep standing up. I never did that beforehand.
I saw that so many times.
I remember standing on the bridge at 4 o'clock and just, wait, what just happened? Yeah. You fell asleep standing up. I didn't know how to do that.
I saw so many people. I forgot about that. They were literally, bam, they would fall right out.
Yep.
Like, what happened? And they didn't faint. They just fell asleep because they're so sleep deprived.
Yep. And you were also, it was a separate duty station, the clinic in Boston, or that was separate than the Eagle?
Yeah, except for an Eagle, because when you first go in, kind of like in the Navy, you know, you're a non-rate, you don't have a title yet, and you're enlisted. And I went to A school, I went to be corpsman out in California, Petaluma. And then after that, because the ship that I was on, we were out at sea so much that I had a higher billing to be able to pick. So if you were on a small boat station and you were on a sea that much, and I come from being out at sea half of the year, all of a sudden, if you and I, you know, were to pick where we're going to go, they're going to give me the option first, and you're going to get, you know, the scraps that's left over. Yep. And then you're going to be going to sea, essentially. And so I was able to pick where I was able to go, which was fortunate. And well, I say pick, you know how it is. You fill a dream sheet out and you hope you get it. So I filled the dream sheet out, and then one of those on there were Boston. And then, so I chose that. And I was fortunate enough, and I got stationed in Boston, and that was an incredible experience working in the clinic and being there. Was able to really do a lot within there. Really, I think in any branch of the service, you learn so much more about yourself, what you're capable of, and you far exceeds any expectation you put upon yourself. So it was fun. That's when I got back into school. I was going to night classes at Bunker Hill University, trying to set myself up to transition out of the Coast Guard so I can finish my degree. And then I would go every summer to Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Science. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the admin there got tired of seeing me, because I said, look, I'm taking these classes, and if I take these, will these credits transfer over? And they're like, yeah, you could have called me. I'm like, well, yeah, but if I call, I'm going to be put on hold, or you're going to get me this person, and I'm going to spend an hour, you know, possibly not getting a straight answer. I said, I'd rather just walk in the door and you tell me straight up, and then I could be on my way. So it worked out that way. And then I make sure everything transitioned over, because I don't want to waste time taking classes that wasn't going to transition over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that's something either to highlight about veterans, or maybe that civilians maybe don't understand, is that I think because of those long nights, because of the sometimes intense training we have to go through, I think sometimes we just have an attitude like, look, I'm going to find a solution. If it means I come here every single day and you see my ugly face, like, sorry, this is going to have to happen. I have this goal. I have to achieve it. Kind of in the same way as, like, sometimes the military has no fail missions. We have, like, we can't fuck this up because the nation's relying on us, people. Or, you know, when you're on watch, other people are asleep. So if you F it up again, you know, you're not impacting just you. You're impacting the other people that are there in the Coast Guard with you. And then I'm kind of glad I didn't understand the magnitude of this when I was actually in, but now I'm much more like, no, it's not, you're not affecting you and them. You're affecting them and their families and their friends and their futures. I'm kind of glad I didn't have that magnitude. The captain of my second ship, every time he approved someone for a new watch qualification, that had to have like his approval, he would tell you that. He's like, congratulations, I hope you enjoy your new watch. Now realize, please, that there's 1,300 people on this ship.
All right.
Just kind of like left it there. Like, please take your responsibility very seriously. We're all relying on you. And you're kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
And that's really like all he ever had to say. Like, 1,300 people on a ship.
Oh, right. Shit.
Yeah. Don't fall asleep. Yeah, definitely.
Something else you said when we were planning the show was that you have a strong memory bank to draw on from your Coast Guard experience. So now, like, it's sort of like your motivation or sort of, could you talk more about that?
Yeah, sure. For, like, I kind of alluded to it a minute ago, is the part where for me is like being pushed beyond anything I ever thought and imaginable, right? So coming from Memphis, Tennessee, being on this, like I said, this massive sailing vessel, and once you're away from the port, engines are cut, then you're relying totally on the wind. So it's like you're sailing essentially in the 1700s. Yep. I mean, just you're going across the Atlantic in this massive ship. But from that, having to be thrust in this role where I'm having to learn all the lines or rigging, the new terminologies that comes with the military, and working to collaborate with everybody, because you can't just go, ah, you know what, this is tough. And can somebody come pick me up out here in the ocean? And I want to go back home. You can't quit. So you have to push through and learn through stuff. And then, which was exciting because I was learning things on the fly and having to, because as you mentioned, it's not just my life that depends on it. It's everybody else that's on that ship. And then their families could be affected with it, which at the time I didn't think about that either, but it's interesting you brought that up. So for me, and then being on this massive ship and then sailing, like I said, about the 1700s, 1800s, it was a wild experience, but I had to learn it, because once the cadets came on there, we had to not only train them on how to operate in the shipboard life with them, that, but also for their safety, but also how to coincide with other people from other backgrounds, other ethnicities, and how to collaborate to be a team effort. So that was something that I didn't have any really prior knowledge to. So a lot of things that I do now, if it gets tough, difficult, wherever I get to the point, I'm like, man, what am I doing? Then I think, dude, like, look at what you've, and then I look at those times and these where I've been sleep deprived to be able to stand watch and, you know, sailing through some crazy seas to, you know, not only save people's life on our ship, but other people's life, and rescue, you know, immigrants or, you know, drifting out at sea and coming up to them and helping them out. And just all these little pieces that they come flooding back, all these memories of things that I've done that I never in my wildest dreams thought I was even capable of. If you told me before the Coast Guard some of the things that I would do and achieve, then I would say, hey, you're crazy. That's not me. But now I can look back and go, man, I'm so blessed and fortunate to have done that. Then I could just pull from that and say, okay, look, this may be tough, but man, you went through boot camp. <You know>? Yep. Now, that's not a cakewalk either. So I appreciate it.
And that's I think that's a good lesson for me to take away, is that I probably don't recall specifically on like military times when I'm struggling. Like, yeah, you did all that. You can get through this stuff. Like, no one's shooting at you. No one's, you know, yeah. You're not out there literally halfway across the world. Your problems are like the air conditioning went out here last weekend in Florida in the summer. Yeah. And I thought it was the end of the world. And it was. It certainly was. We almost died, sure. Of course. No, but I mean, relatively, like, okay, it's 80 degrees. I could be in Afghanistan with 40 pounds of gear on me all day with people shooting at me. So is this 80 degree, no air conditioning, really that bad? No, not really.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially like times being away from my family for, you know, half the year, and then I only be able to correspond through email briefly, and, you know, just being away from them. And I saw people even at boot camp, you know, take a toll on them. You asked earlier about that. And I saw some of these young men and women that were struggling because they were away from their family, and they loved it when they got a letter from them. They're like, oh my gosh. And it brought so much joy to them. But that was the first time they were truly away from somebody. So there was just seeing that going through, and then working full time in a clinic and taking night classes and working around the clock. And we had a 1-year-old and recently married. And I'm thinking, man, my plate was so full then. So what I do now is I just look at all that as a time capsule to push me through. When I think something's difficult, then I realize it's really not that bad.
Yep. Exactly.
Yeah.
One thing we can relate to is it was a bonus, I think, of your military time. It was personal travel that I was fortunate to do. But at one point in my life, I was walking through France, and I was walking along, and suddenly I found myself like 8 feet lower in elevation in this big circle. And I was like, This is odd. It's kind of perfectly cylindrically, or not circle. It was a circle shape, but it's like 8 feet lower and kind of rises back up to the other surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you know what I'm saying, but what I was standing in was a crater created by some kind of artillery fired by our military or the Allied militaries at the attack on Normandy, D-Day. And that, like, that was one of the first things we did is you walk up from, you know, the other way down. You're walking in from Europe on, like, to the beaches instead of from the beach, or yeah, from the beaches into Europe.
Yeah.
It was one of the first things they took us to was literally, look at this. It was, you know, 60, 70 years later, the crater's still there and it probably still be there forever. And it's not like, hey, this is the one crater. It was
all
of that geography is now permanently altered by those amazing days. Could you talk a little bit about your time when you saw Omaha Beach and Utah Beach?
Yeah, it was such a profound experience. The hair on my arm started to raise up just rethinking about it. And to your point, yeah, it's such a moving experience because I remember standing up top looking down and I was just thinking about, you know, past brothers and sisters that have just stormed the beaches and then just visualizing it. And it's one thing when you see documentaries, it's one thing when you read about it, but when you're actually there in person and you're seeing it, man, just you get flooded with these emotions and it puts it really in perspective. For me, it did. I think anybody that goes through it, as you talked about, really does. And you're seeing this and you're like, wow, like it just, my heart just sank for them and imagining what they had to experience. And then you go to the cemetery there and then you look into the graves that are there. And then just, it really, man, just was such a moving experience that I mean, like, and then seeing the way that it was all laid out, it was honestly, I don't know how in the heck that we did it. I'm like, I see that. I'm like, man, the perseverance and just the fortitude it took for everybody to just see in the bravery to know what they were encountering and looking at these cliffs and thinking, okay, like looking at the person next to them, like, man, brother, sister, I love you, but let's do this. And then they're not there and you keep going just to keep, I mean, I don't know. My absolute respect for that generation that went through that. It was profound. But anybody that's ever thinking about or considering checking that out, man, they need to get on a plane and go over there. As soon as things open up, if they can, they need to go over there and check that out.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was thinking also was I wish there was a way to get every single person to see that. You mentioned the cemetery, and what I remember about the cemetery was you walk in, I don't know, I walked in from one direction and you see there's either like a chapel for memorial services or just a chapel. And I saw it, I'm looking at everything and in my head I'm saying, okay, I pegged that as the back of the cemetery. And I'm like, wow, this place is massive.
Yeah.
Started looking around, you see all the different, like, you know, you really get involved in it. You move further and further into the cemetery, you get to that chapel. And you realize you're standing now in the center of the cemetery. And you realize, oh, no, no, no. What you thought was massive was half of the cemetery. And you went, oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's daunting for sure.
Yep. Something that starting a veteran podcast for me really has helped me do has been reconnecting with veterans. And like you said, we're kind of taking trips back down memory lane on our service, on things we've done relating to that. Do you have any advice or do you stay connected to a lot of the people you served with? And I guess I'm finding as I do more shows, I reconnect with more people. And it's, I think, adding a lot of value to my life because sometimes it's people that I know for sure that talking to other veterans, they probably have more probably access to me. And what I'm trying to say is they could probably call me out of my shit much more immediately because I know they're a veteran. And I'll give them that respect. Okay. Instead of just like someone else walking up and they say the same thing to me, I would go, piss off.
Yeah.
But a veteran walks up and I'm like, all right, I got to respect this opinion a little bit more.
Yeah. Do
you have any, are you connected to a lot of people you served with or?
Yeah. There's some guys that we've reconnected with and just cause like I said, I got out in 2010 and then life got rolling along. I kept in touch with, you know, a lot of them. Some of them kind of faded out. And then some of the guys we've now reconnected, we hadn't connected in a while. And man, we got on the phone and it was like we it was like a few years and we connected, and then we got on the phone. It's like we spoke yesterday. It was just an instant connection, instant bond. It's just cool, man. Cause we experienced something that doesn't matter what level or experience you have in the service, wherever you're going through in that moment, whoever you're with. I mean, it's just, especially like the ship that I was on, we have such a connection that, man, we're forever linked in that moment. So wherever any branch anybody's in, wherever they're going through, they're going to be forever linked in that moment and that time they spent. But it's something that you truly can't explain to, nothing against people in the civilian world or sector. They just won't understand it. You can put all the acronyms, you can put all the analogies, you know, the adjectives to it to try to say, hey, and paint that picture, but they're not going to fully understand unless you speak to those brothers and sisters that have gone through it and walked that walk. And then it's like, okay, it's almost like, I don't want to say fraternity or sorority, because that is nothing even remotely comparing to the experience you go through in the service and the work, the dedication, the sleep deprived, all the stuff, the sacrifice you have to do, like whatever they're doing, kickstands and a shotgun and stuff, you know, when they're in college. So that's nothing remotely close to that. So there's just that brother and sisterhood that you connect with, and it's forever linked. And I'm so grateful to have those connections. Like I said, there's guys I can call up right now. I can go, man, I go months now, cause I just get caught up in my own life, you know, doing things. And I have, you know, two kids and married, and they get, you know, hustle and bustle of life. It's just the way things go. But all of a sudden, if I think, man, I need to reach out to them, see what they're doing. Like I said, we'll connect like we spoke yesterday, and it may be 3 months, which is really cool.
It's almost to me like a free like therapy session. Cause I said, if they have that access to me, or I'll tell them, like, I can see myself. Like, I tell people like so much more stuff than I'll tell other people. So it's almost like, wow, this is nice. I can just mentally dump all the stuff I can't explain to other people.
Yeah. Cause they get it, man. Instantly they get it.
Yep.
Yeah.
When did you separate from the Coast Guard?
It was in May of 2010, but I had enough leave saved up where, and so if you work it right, for those that are, anybody that hears this that is thinking about transitioning out or about to get out, I had enough leave backlogged. I don't know how it is in other branches, but for the Coast Guard, you can go up to 90 days, you know. So I had, I don't recall the number, but I know that my, I guess I could do the math quick, but I'm not going to do the math. So my final day in the Coast Guard was July 5th, 2010. And I had to start school May 17th of 2010, but I had enough leave saved up where my last day was May 14th. So I stepped out of Coast Guard and went straight into college, but I was still had enough leave set up. So I was getting paid all the way up till July 5th. And then, so it was nice. So I was still getting all that pay backlog, and I had all that stuff saved up. So if anybody's thinking about getting out, I would backlog a bunch of days, save it up, and then make that transition and still get hooked up with the pay.
But here's something that I don't know if just the Navy screws this one. Well, if sailors screw this one up or not, but when I was separating, I heard so many stories and so many people warned me of, hey, this is very real. You're going on terminal leave. You're not out until you're out.
Yeah.
Don't go screw this up, because there have definitely been plenty of sailors or service members worldwide. They think they're out. They go out and they get a DUI. You're still on active duty.
Yeah.
You're going back to mast. You may lose rank, and then you're going to get out. And it's like, huh?
Yeah. So
that's probably another big warning, is that you're not out until you have a DD-214, and the date on the DD-214 is in the past.
Yeah, no, 100%. That's a great point.
Then you can relax a little bit.
Yeah, no.
Until that says, like, my service is over.
Yeah, that's a great point. Definitely something you didn't want to take heed, because I was just hustling and bustling so much with the family and school that I didn't really have time to screw up. And I didn't want to screw up. So you're right. Yes. For those that don't, yeah, they need to take heed to that for sure.
Yeah, I heard that many times. So many people came up and told me, like, look, I've seen people screw this up.
Yeah. That makes sense. I could see that happening for sure for a lot of people. But yeah, so save that terminal leave up. I saw some people that when they were ready to get out, they only had 5 days and they were disappointed. I'm like, you knew this day was coming. It didn't sneak up on you. So I don't know why you took so many days prior to.
So skipping ahead a little bit from 2010, at one point you had a family, corporate life going pretty well, and you had the wild, crazy idea to leave all that behind and go into business for yourself. And can you tell us what the Follow app is?
Yeah, sure. It's an app that we recently launched, and it's geared towards business professionals that are out attending a networking event, such as the Chamber of Commerce, BNI, Business Networking Event, Business Network International, any really pocket now that things are starting to open back up with COVID, just a way to connect with people that are in the room. So I'm going to give you an example of what that looked like during a luncheon we had down here, and it's coming up soon, actually next month in South Haven, Mississippi. There's going to be about 300-400 people in the luncheon. And so when people are downloading the app and they use it, instantly they'll be able to connect with those 300 people in the room, and everything is sorted and stored, your contacts alphabetically by industry. So instead of before you taking a business card and passing it to 7 to 10 people, or collecting those 7 to 10 business cards, and those are piling up, now you have a chance of connecting with more of the masses and meeting that next referral partner client that you previously missed during an event.
So you're digitally connecting everyone through the app.
Yeah. They have, it's a user discretion. If they want to opt in, if they want to say, you know what, hey, I'm here, I want to be seen, I'm visible to connect. We're finding out through research and surveys we've conducted that it's the case. Cause I mean, that's why people are going to a networking event, so they can grow their business. But we found out that those that are going to an event, sometimes they're an introvert, they're nervous to either work a room and they don't know how, or that they see the food and they go for the food, or they go for the drink. Or like myself, when I first started networking, I would call my wife, hear her voice, like, okay, this is what it's about, you know, family. And I would walk into the room. Even then I walked in and I thought, shit, I don't know anybody. So I would just go grab a drink, or I would go get some food. And then I realized I left the event feeling empty. I thought I didn't meet the right person to grow my business. And yes. So we encountered those people. And there are people that are work in the room a lot, and they're collecting business cards, but they're not taking the time to stop and put those contacts into their phone or CRM that they're using, like a Salesforce or HubSpot. So then they're having these business cards that are piling up on rubber bands in their drawer, their desk, in their car, purse, jacket, wherever. And so we realize now with the app, they're able to connect instantly with everybody in the room, and then leave back the business cards.
It's kind of funny you say that. And for the people who are watching the video of this, what I'm holding is my stack of.
Yeah.
Jesus. Sorry. Probably 200 business cards. That's just a waste of information because, I don't go back through these. They're not sort. Well, they're alphabetical, but that's about it. What I was thinking was that, one, I honestly think. Maybe not my kids, but my grandkids won't know what a business card is. They'll go away. I think they're going to be a relic. And
we need to.
I mean, it saves money. Like you said, one, you don't have to buy them. Two, they do just pile up on your desk. You don't have the information. But the really nice thing is, for someone who's really good at working the room, and everyone knows like a couple people that can really rock an event. Mm-hmm. Now, if you and I talk for our 60 seconds or whatever, like if we're really doing it right and we can really like, hey, Robbie, how can I help you? How can you help me? We don't have to say, all right, what's your number? All right. Let me get my phone. Let me type it in 1-800, call Robbie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that is the number that is. It's if you want it, that it's 1-800 call Robbie.
Yeah.
But it also, I didn't realize that,
but it'll be somebody.
Yeah, I think I'm going to call later this afternoon and be like, hello?
your wife might hear, though.
But no, it does save that time. That's time that I don't have to ask for information. It's just, are you on WhatsApp? Are you on the Follow app? Okay, I've already got your information. Thank you. Nice to meet you. I'm out. I'm on to the next one. So it's 60 full seconds of like actual like valuable talking here. I don't have to waste any time on anything else. And then, move on to the next person. So even for the people on an elite level who are like, I don't need that. I know how to do my thing. Okay. Yeah. Cut that time out where you have to do that. It's already coming through the Follow app. Now just keep on rolling. That's a really great idea.
Absolutely. And then we have people too, if they want, they could put their preferred method of contact on there. So now that we're connected after the event, I'll go to look you up and say, well, let me see. You know, I can get in touch with Adam and then go, oh, wow. His preferred method is email. Then I could just shoot you an email instead of calling you. It goes to voicemail. And I'm thinking, I called him 4 days ago. How come he hasn't heard from me? Or should I reach out again? Then you play this guessing game. What should I text, email? Now, you know, okay, you know what? He's an email. Or then, you know, Shelly over here is a text message. This person's a phone call. So that way it just kind of streamlines that communication just to make it that much easier, because we don't want to waste that time and it's valuable. And then as much as we enjoy talking to different people, well, some people enjoy it, some people might not, I don't know. But if they're in an event and they're talking to somebody and it is the wrong person, I had somebody tell me they called them time wasters, and they like, man, I'm wasting my time talking to this person when person to my right over here could be the person I need to do business with. Then this way they're not missing that chance. They can talk to that time waster and they can leave and go, you know what, I'm still okay because I'm still able to connect with 30 people in the room that I previously missed. Now I have their contact information and I can reach out. And then the contact information too, because I have people ask me, well, it's not your home, it's not your address, it's not your personal stuff. It's the same thing that's on your business card. It's the same thing that when you walk to somebody and you hand that card, it's the same exact thing. People are there to do that, to network. So it's not any different than what's on your business card. It's just, we need to shift out of that mentality of carrying that sheet of paper on you to hand it out, because then you're stuck with a sleeve of 500 and all of a sudden you get promoted, or all of a sudden you get a great opportunity to leave and you go to another company and another 500 business cards you previously had, you only, you know, handed out 200. What are you going to do with the other 300? You got to throw them away and you got to order more business cards. Well, now with the follow app, all I have to do is go in, update my profile with my new contact information. And now that everybody else that I've have passed my contact information out, next time they go to look me up on the phone, they'll see that I have a new career or I'm in a new industry. So if we were connected through the follow up and you go, man, I want to see what Robbie's doing, or I need to get in touch with him for whatever business, and you can go, wow, you know what? He's no longer in agriculture. He's now, you know, a contractor for an AC and I need a new AC unit. So I'm going to give him a call because I ran into him 2 months ago. So it just makes it that much easier.
And something else I was thinking of is I am normally pretty introverted, or I'm at least shy until I'm comfortable. What the follow app is also doing is maybe giving the introverts their introduction, because some people might be better, like, okay, it is a big step just to get to the networking event or just to go. Like sometimes, like, yeah, maybe that's if you're brand new in a new industry, or you went from I went from the Navy to doing engineering for the Navy to financial services and insurance. So quite different. And I did have to get into that. Like, I have to network, I have to market myself, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. There were definitely events where it was get a soda, kind of look around awkwardly. But with the follow up, what I envision all the introverts doing is, yeah, you can follow up later and say, hey, we didn't get a chance to talk. And maybe that's someone's strategies. I know I'm not good at it, but then I want to pick three people, schedule three lunches. I mean, that's how I really get like my actual networking. Like, I go get the 30 names and then now I'll do my work.
Yeah, maybe absolutely.
It's another way to use it too.
Yeah, 100%. That's another thing that it's used for, because the thing is too, we give the user discretion. If they want to add everybody, you can add all in the room. Or to your point, you mentioned about financial services and stuff that you're doing. You knew other businesses that you worked well with, kind of the cross-pollination of referrals. Yes. So that way you can realize, you know what, I don't need to talk to, you know, the principal that's in a room. If somebody has their education, because they're this listed by their name and industry, you know what industry you work well with and coincide with. So then you can go, you know what, out of the 30 people, I don't need all of these people to add. I'm only going to add these 10 people here because they're in an industry that I can really work well with, and I want to have a coffee with them or lunch at another time. So you can add those 10 and just leave the other 20 to the side. And then after the event, to your point, you can say, hey, you know what, I missed you during that luncheon or breakfast or whatever, but you know, we connected through the app. I would love to, you know, get a, and then a chance to follow up after that, and then a chance to really sit down and, you know, and then create that business relationship that you missed before. And now you can have it right there on the spot.
Yep. Awesome. How in the world did you transition from, I think you were doing mostly, you know, you were a corpsman, I think you stayed mostly in the healthcare space. How do you build an app? Or how Maybe what I try to ask for a lot of the listeners and what I'm trying to do is say there's the E4, the E5 that's sitting on Coast Guard Cutter Eagle right now. He wants to get out. He wants to build an app. What's your advice for Seaman Timmy? We always called him in the Navy.
I say, do it. I mean, and it goes back to what we, you know, kind of mentioned earlier is I will say that I never set out with the intention to build an app, to go down this journey, but what gave me the courage to venture into the unknown and go into stuff that I never even thought about or dreamed about or envisioned. And it was drawing back from past experience that I've had when I was in the service and think, okay, you know, you were put in situations that you knew nothing about. You learned quickly, people depended upon you, and you succeeded and you did what you needed to do to overcome things that you never thought possible. So I thought, okay, I just took that same mentality of building an app. Like, all right, I don't know anything about this, but let's get in here and figure out what we need to do. And so then I met with somebody I knew who built a website, kind of a software company, if you will. They did build a software company. They still have it. And I was picking his brain and he said, well, hey, I know a couple of developers. Cause I thought about learning code and I thought, man, if I learn code, it's going to take me so long to get there. So let me figure out streamline that. So then I thought, well, going back to the Coast Guard, I'm like, well, I know what it's like to be in a team and build a team and have that mentality of getting everybody on the same page. So I thought, let me just do that. So built a team and finding the right people and talking to the right people and putting things in place. And then realizing, and then trying to find investors. So it was a whole nother world that I didn't know about that I'm learning. And then you go for the aspect of, okay, what does it take to build? Like this, you know, the old saying, you know, the best way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. So you just take it in sprint. It's going to 2-week sprint. Okay, well, this is what we need to do for this amount of time. This is what we do for the next one, kind of time block, instead of looking at it. Because it's daunting. If you look at everything you have to do to get to the point to even launch in the store, there's a lot behind the scenes. And once you learn incrementally how to go about it and just chip away at it, you'll get there. And then you're like, okay, what's the next step to get users and the data for that? And then you look at that picture and then kind of chip away of what we need. Because once you have an idea, I will say this, and then once you get it in the user's hands, that's when you really get an idea of what they need. So then like, okay, then you got to listen and tweak and backlog. And we're still doing things to change and perfect. And there's still stuff that we have updates we want to bring up to the forefront of it and do. So it's exciting. There's still work that lies ahead, but every day is a new day we can learn and tweak and get better. So that's just the whole aspect of it. And it's going to get tough. Like if somebody does it, just realize, hey, don't give up at the first time something doesn't go your way.
Can you give us the like the 30,000 foot view of, you know, you decided you were going to do it on January 1st, and when was the first launch? When general timeline of how long that took, what that looks like? When did you go live? From when did you conceive?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it was before COVID. It was the summer of 2019. Found a developer we were working with, and we're meeting every 2 weeks. At the time, not knowing what I know now, I put way too much trust in this guy. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me, hey, I'll do your website, I'll do Android, and I'll do iPhone. I thought, fantastic. And I realized, looking back, I put way too much trust, responsibility, and weight on this young guy's shoulders. I mean, I'm 44. At the time I was 42, this guy was 25 or 26. Great guy. I mean, incredible guy. I mean, really smart, but just, I relied too heavily on him. And after a year, I could tell it was just weighing on him. Mm-hmm. And then, so through networking, I found another individual who is now our CTO. When I first approached him about the idea, he goes, no, man, I have too much on my plate. So, all right, cool. So then about another 6 months went by, I approached him again. He said, yeah, I'm on board. And once he came on board, the guy that I was working with, he 2 weeks into it, he sent me a text and he just said, hey man, I'm out. I thought, man, like,
wow,
a text. Like, yeah. Dude. So I picked the phone up, called him. I was nice. I was cordial. I said, look, why are you out? What is this? What's going on? And then we had a, you know, fine conversation. And I even told him, I said, look, I appreciate everything you've done for me to this point and what, you know, where we've gone. I said, but And so if you need a recommendation, if you need to put this on a resume when you're applying for something that you, you know, worked with a startup, I said, let me know, man. I'll be happy to do that. I'm not going to have any ill will, because I learned that back when I was in the service, because I never forget. I won't say the guy's name just in case he happens to hear this, but I never forget. He was like, man, we're on the ship. And he said, man, you know, because we were working together at one point. And he goes, you know, I didn't think you would ever work with me. I said, man, I don't work with you. I said, you know, we have to get the job done. And I said, now don't get it mixed up. I said, when we get the port call, I said, we're not going out to get a beer. I said, I was going to lay that out there. I said, we're not getting a beer together. I said, but I'll work with you. I said, so I'll work with anybody and everybody. I don't care what the relationship is, you know, on the friendship side, there's things that have to be done. We do it and we move forward. Yep. So he's kind of looked at me like I hurt his feelings. I'm like, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings. I'm just being real. Like, we're not going to spend time together outside of the ship. Great guy though. I mean, had a great work ethic. And so I just took that same mentality with this guy. He did a lot of, we worked together. Everything was great. So I said, hey, if you need something, you know, I will, you know, help you whatever way possible. But you know, we're not going to go get a beer together, you know, but so once the CTO came on board, it really took us to another level. Pandemic hit and we decided, all right, are we going to stop and keep going? And I said, no, man, we can't keep going because we got to, it's going to help people out. Now creates a COVID friendly environment. And now people are apprehensive or worried about networking and passing and getting close within that 6 feet bubble or that 6 foot bubble. I said, so our app actually helps people out in those environments. Yes. So I said, hey, let's keep going. So then we launched, had a couple articles written towards the end of last year and beginning of this year. And then now we're actually really been able to really test it the past few months because doors are starting to finally open up beginning of this year.
Yes.
So we launched during the pandemic, well, October last year, and then things were all locked down. So it really wasn't, or they're trying to open, then they shut down again. So it was an interesting time. Now we're really getting to see the feedback and get stuff. So it's the past few months have been really beneficial. Feedback has been amazing. We greatly appreciate the pilot programs we have now. And we're, yeah, so it's been, it's, the journey's been wild. It's been fun. But, you know, like I said, we're just getting started.
And that's still incredible to hear. I mean, I'm sure many people's startup story has similar struggles, but I guess, you know, starting in summer of 19, the launch of the app was October of 20. I guess that's what I was, the message I was trying to send to people still in, or just people trying to look for different, like, what does that take? So that was 15 months of background work, of legwork, just to get, you know, like the first, like, okay, what is this thing? What do we do with this?
Yeah. Well, it, don't get me wrong, it also depends too on, like, somebody may have the financial backing and they could do it a lot faster. So we're going extremely lean, bootstrapping, because most people don't have that. So, I mean, it was tapping into, you know, your own finances, finding an investor, working out with an investor, so then getting that money and then being able to help. And that was key as well. I mean, there are accelerators and stuff you can get involved with that you can apply to. And if you get picked up, you know, they may give you $100,000 for 5% equity or something, but just because in this, an accelerator and you apply to it, doesn't mean you're going to get in, because they're very selective as well, because they want to see an app or a company that's already established. You have some traction, be it a user base, be it a revenue, they want to see something. So it's not like you can just say, hey, I've got this idea, can I apply? You can, but 9 out of 10 times, if not 10 out of 10, they're going to say, no, we appreciate, you know, we love your idea, but come back to us when you have generated some more, you know, traction. And so, because we've been going so lean for so long, that's why it's taken us a little bit longer. But as much as I'm the type of person, I want things done yesterday and not today, then I have to tell myself, okay, be patient. There's a reason for this. And I look back, kind of a divine intervention. Like I said, when I left to left Memphis to going to Coast Guard, and I met my wife. And so I had to look at things, as you can tell, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't realize how much I draw from my past to be in the present. So but it kind of helps me out in that regard. So then I go, okay, well, we've done this, we've gone through here. So it lets me know that we're on the right path. And when I first started, I mean, I had like not knowing what I didn't know. So we were an LLC at first, but then I realized investors don't want to see an LLC. They want to see a Delaware C Corp. So We shifted over to a Delaware C Corp in February of this year, and that's helped us out to attract and sit down at the table and talk to more investors. And so if somebody's thinking, I'll get started, go ahead and do a Delaware C Corp if you feel like you're going to need an investor at some point, because that's more appealing to them. If they see an LLC, it's not an issue to change it. It really isn't. You can get that done in a day to change it over. That's not a problem to do.
Yes.
But to attract them, you need a Delaware C Corp in that regard. You'll need, man, a strong team. You need, it can't hurt to have advisors. I started with one, now I'm up to four advisors, incredible individuals from various backgrounds that I tap into, I'll talk to. I draw from their experience and pick their brain, and they say, hey, they can help navigate the course to get to where we are, and they're instrumental too in our growth. So it's been really cool and fun, Ron. It's been a blessing to this point.
Yes. Something I would add for all the listeners is, for civilians or veterans, there are specific ones just for veterans, but I know there's an organization called SCORE. And it's senior or retired, even fully retired executives who've had their full career, and now they are basically volunteering their time and they're acting. Basically, just go get a coffee with them, or they can be your free advisor. I don't know all the details, but if anyone's looking, I know that is a great resource. I tried to use it a couple of different times, but never, it never really made sense. But
yeah,
that's definitely something I would say is, yes, you absolutely need an advisor, but maybe don't go pay someone $10,000 day one. Maybe, yeah, for, you know, sure, get this guy's feedback, get this guy's feedback, start doing a little work, go back to him, or go to somebody else even, you know. I think the popular thing is, all right, let me go hire someone. He'll tell me exactly how to do it. I'll have given him 10 grand. So now I'm missing mortgage payments.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, you're right. There are organizations that can help you in that regard. And I'll say too is, don't, if somebody that's thinking about an idea or doing something or with a company, don't, and I know it's going to be essentially your baby, but don't hold the equity so close to your chest, because be willing to have those open conversations, but don't just give everything away just to give it away. But be realistic and say, okay, you know what? I can give a percentage here, a percentage of this. And that way you're still the majority owner of it, but know that what you can have that freedom to give away and comfortable with. So that way you can put the right team in place so you can get to the level you want to get to.
Yeah. Maybe you need to decide before you ever give away any equity, what you're going to give away.
Yeah.
Never beyond 30%, never beyond 49%, or, you know, that is the tipping point. I want 51%. Now it's staying as my company, not yours.
Yeah, for sure.
Where could people find you online?
No, it's easy, man. It's at the follow up 20. So it's that's for LinkedIn and Facebook. Those are the places where more heavily on Facebook. That way people can go through, and we'll do a lot of posts from our podcast on there and stuff we have with the app, and then LinkedIn as well. Except LinkedIn, it's not Robbie Yates, it's Robert Yates. That's my professional name on LinkedIn.
what I was trying to get was, I knew you had a podcast. Can you tell us quickly what is the podcast, what it's about, what the listeners enjoy for that?
Yeah, the name of it is Where the Fortune Is. And it's a podcast where I talk with leaders with various industries, and we talk about the trials, triumphs, and innovations they've had to get to where they are. And we do kind of like this. We talk to about, you know, where they started, kind of what got them in, where that spark that led them into their industry.
Yes.
And then like stuff they, like I said, the trials, triumphs they've had, and then what they've done to succeed. And that's been cool. I met some amazing people, as I'm sure you've met some great, incredible people as well.
Yes.
And just, oh man, there's some powerful people in this world that it's just interesting to talk to and feed off the energy so you can keep going.
Awesome. I went blank. I had a question of something you said, and I was like, yes. One final strategic question. Did you start the podcast before the app? Did you start the podcast as part like marketing for the app? Was there any strategy related there?
Yeah, the latter for sure. It was before the app was released. I started April of last year because it's something we always talked around about doing or thought about doing. And I thought, well, let me just get started with it. And then I reached out to a guy I know, a great individual, Don Farrell. He has a company called Fresh Revenues. I said, hey, can I use you as a sponsor within here so I could plug in a commercial or a little sponsorship? And he said, yeah, sure. So I was able to do that. I didn't charge him anything because I was just getting going. I can't say, hey, you know what? Day one, we don't have anything. Here, give me $500 or something. So I just said, hey, let's get rolling. And then once we launched the app, then I removed his sponsorship and I put my own sponsorship in there. And then actually, if somebody ever, whenever they hear it, the woman's voice that's on the commercial for Follow App, it's a short little blurb. It's actually my wife doing that.
Awesome.
And so she doesn't, she used to do some voice. She went through voice lessons. She used to be an actor, or an actress, and she went to NYU and she was all this training. So she, hats off to her for what she did. I love hearing her voice on there because she does a great job with it. Yes. So now we use a way to plug that as another marketing tool. For that. And it's just been fun doing that and just meeting, like I said, just incredible people. Initially started, I think, well, I'll just talk to people in my backyard here in Memphis, Tennessee. And then somebody, the guy who actually introduced me to the first developer, I don't know, his name's Vinky Mondapati, great guy. And he said, he reached out to me on LinkedIn. He goes, hey, I want to connect you with this guy, Sam Kamani in New Zealand. I thought, okay, like what's pandemic? Sure, why not? And then, so that really opened my eyes. And I thought, wow, like who else is out there we can talk with halfway around the world? Sam was a great guy. We spoke. He has a startup himself. And actually, more than that, he actually has a successful business and he's now created an app. And so he's doing very well. And he's a speaker. He's just written a couple of books. Great guy. And so he was on the show. And then that, I thought, okay, like who else is out there in the world that I can speak with? And then, so we started, we've had guests on from the UK, from South Africa, India, Ireland, a lot of people from the US. So it just really opened it up and it just really started chatting with people around the world. And it's been an absolute blessing. Like I said, I was going to do stuff in my backyard and here I am talking to people around the world. So it's been pretty wild.
Yep. It's the beauty of the internet.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Robbie, thank you. I learned a ton. I learned a lot about the Coast Guard specifically. It's funny because, I mean, the Navy and the Coast Guard seem so similar, but are still kind of very different in their individual missions. But yeah, everyone listening could definitely benefit from the Follow app. And it was just an incredible conversation. So I thank you.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the time. And it's been, I really enjoyed it. I felt like we've been talking for 5 minutes, but it went by quick.
Yes, it does. It always does. Sometimes I'm like, hey, I got to wrap this up because I feel like I'm just stealing all your day and I probably could talk all day.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Thanks, Robbie.